to this session. My name's Chris Testoneal. I work as a features engineer within the analytics and data science team. And today, in this video, we're going to look at loading data in Azure SQL Data Warehouse. There are two videos before this. There's one on key concepts, and there is another on creating databases and tables. So this video is a follow-on from that. So if you haven't seen those videos before, I would advise that you go and see them. Let's look at the agenda. So in this session, what we're going to look at is, firstly, we'll start by looking at what's called the load user. This is a database user that's created for the purpose of loading data into an Azure SQL data warehouse. We'll look at the range of options that are available for loading data itself. We'll focus specifically on one technique of loading called Polybase, and then we'll look at how we can import and export data loads. We'll look at monitoring data loads and provide you with some code that you can use to do that. And then we'll look at how Azure SQL Data Warehouse can interact and integrate with Azure Data Factory. And then we'll wrap up with some recommendations. So the load user is probably one of the first objects that you'll create once you've provisioned an Azure SQL Data Warehouse and created a database. And with the load user created, you would then use that user account to perform the loads. Now, it's one login that you create, and you map that login to a database user, and you effectively give that user service admin permissions, so it's kind of full SA permissions. And one of the things that this does is it provides fixed memory assignments dependent on the data warehouse units that you choose, but it's a very, very important point. There are additional benefits. So the fact that you've got a dedicated load user means that you can monitor the load requests a lot easier when looking at monitoring queries. It gives you a more granular permissions model. So basically you're mindful of only giving the permissions that the account needs rather than everything. And as I mentioned before, it provides flexible memory management by determining the amount of memory per distribution that the load user will get. And this is impacted by other things that we'll look at in a moment. So the first thing you're going to do is create a login, and that's done at the instance level. And in this case, we're calling the login login name, and we're using the password of SQLB1TS exclamation mark. Now, with that login created, you'll then map a database user to that login. So in this case, we've got a user called create user called username for the login called login name. And one of the first two things that you'll do is you will add that username into database roles called login manager and DB manager. And this is done by using the system stored procedure SP add role member. Now, once you've got the login created and the username created and they're added to the roles, there is one more thing to do against the database, and I'll cover that in the next set of code. But I do want to talk about what is called resource classes, because this is really important to the memory assignments that you will give essentially to the dedicated load user. Now, on the left-hand side, you've got four resource classes available. It's called small RC, and RC stands for resource class, medium RC, large RC, and xlarge RC. And you can list all these resource class roles by running the following query against the object sys database principles and filtering where type desk is a database role and is fixed role equals zero. And they will list the roles for you. Now, essentially, with that in mind, there's then a little bit more work to do with that user. So the first line is mapping the database user to login name that we saw in the previous code. You've already added them to the login manager and the DB manager, but what you're also going to do is you're going to grant control on your database. So in this instance, we're granting control on database called MySQLDW to username, and that's the name of the database stored in Azure SQL Data Warehouse. Now, the select statement in the middle really is listing the role principal names and the member principal names for each of the roles for medium RC, large RC, and large RC. But once you've granted control to the database, what you can then do, or what the final step is you're going to add that load user into one of those resource class roles. And in this example at the bottom, we're using the system stored procedure exec SP ad role member, and we're adding the username to the role of Medium RC. So they're the steps that you need to do post provisioning of your SQL data warehouse and database to create your dedicated user. You can identify any users with elevated requests. So this query is really useful when an Azure SQL data warehouse is up and running, and maybe you're coming in to troubleshoot some problems with it. And here you can get the breakdown of the request ID, the command, the status, when it was submitted, when it was started, what wait duration is, and what resource class is being used. Sometimes on customer engagements, we find that customers may not be using the appropriate resource class for loading data in. And this is a useful query to run just to establish what resource class is being used, and then to make a decision on whether or not you should change that. Now, as I mentioned, resource class has an impact on the amount of memory that is used. And on the left-hand side on the axis, you can see the four resource classes, which is small RC, medium RC, large RC, and X-large RC. On the bottom axis, we've got the megabytes per distribution. And on the right-hand side, we've got a legend for the different data warehouse units that are available. Now, in short, if you map a load user to small RC, then regardless of the data warehouse units that you choose, up to 2,000, you are basically going to get 100 megabytes per distribution. And as we discussed in a previous video, you'll always get 60 distributions. So 60 times 100 is 6,000 megabytes. So basically, with small RC, regardless of the data warehouse unit you use, up to 2,000, you're going to be fixed at that 6,000 megabyte limit from a memory point of view. So bear in mind that really at a small RC level, your impact is you'll get more nodes the more data warehouse units you choose at a small RC level. And we discussed nodes in the first video of these series. So if I give you one example, if you were to add your load user into the role large RC, and then you were to set your data warehouse to DW2000, what that then will give you is 3,200 megabytes per distribution. So fundamentally, the resource class is as important as the data warehouse units, because the combination of the data warehouse units and the resource class is to impact the amount of megabytes per distribution. Plus, just switching the data warehouse units will increase the number of nodes that you will get within your data warehouse. Now, for most organizations, we find that medium resource class is ample enough for loading data. We do have occasions where it's constrained, we may go up to large resource class. So let's have a look at the loading options that are available. Now, effectively, we break the loading options down into two areas. We've got parallel loads and we've got single gated clients. Now, parallel loads uses technologies such as Polybase, and you can use components of Azure Data Factory that runs Polybase under the hood. Single gated clients include bulk copy program or insert bulk, SQL bulk copy, SQL Server integration services, data flows, and there's some components of Azure Data Factory that are single gated in nature. What does single gated mean? Well, imagine that the client on the left is a SQL Server integration services package. When it loads data into the Azure SQL Data Warehouse, it does this through talking to the control node. Now, we can slightly improve performance by adding multiple sys packages that are executing at the same time. But because they're all communicating with the control node, we're essentially getting a bottleneck at that level. So this can hinder your loads. So fundamentally, what we use is parallel loading with Polybase, and effectively what Polybase does, it addresses more than just the control node. It actually works with the compute nodes and the storage nodes to such an extent that each compute node will talk to every Azure storage blob within the storage node, so that you can get full parallelism of loading the data. So if performance is your key metric for success of loading data within Azure SQL Data Warehouse, then you should use Polybase. So what I'm going to do is, in this example, show you an example of a single Gator client to load data. From here, I will load log into the Azure portal. So within the Azure portal, we created a SQL Data Warehouse instance called CTO MSFT ADS SQL SRV. If I click on that, that's going to take me to the blade for that particular SQL server. And the first thing I'm going to check is just make sure that my firewall is enabled for this client, because it's been a while since I ran the last video. So in this instance, if I go to firewall, all I'm going to check in the firewall blade is that the IP address that I have here matches the IP address here. And in this instance, what I will do is confirm that that is fine. That's great. And also what I'm going to do is just click on the properties here. And within the properties, I'm going to pull the fully qualified domain name of the server and just copy that. So we'll go into Management Studio, and what I'm going to do is connect to the database engine of the local SQL Server instance. And within this instance, we've got a database called EquityDB that's got three tables that are populated with data. So for example, if I select the top 1,000 records for dates, this will return back a query that will show me the dates in there. And dates is effectively a dimension table within this very simple data warehouse. My intention is not to blind you with science with a complex data warehouse. There you go. So what we're going to do is connect up to the database engine for the Azure SQL Data Warehouse. We'll just put in the password there. Click on connect, and then from this we will expand the databases. And from previous video, we did create a database called EquityDB. This has three tables, and as you can see, we've got business hierarchies, dates, and equity time series data, and within here we have no records in it. So this is an example of us moving data from an on-prem server to an Azure SQL Data Warehouse server by using a single Gator client. Now, to show you that, we're going to drop into Visual Studio. And within Visual Studio, I have a sys project here with a package called package. Let's double click that. Now, this package has simply got one data flow. And there's two connection managers. One is to the on-prem SQL Server instance, SIR3CTO Redmond. We'll just test the connection there. And the second is called Redding, but it's to the instance of Azure SQL Data Warehouse that we've created. What I'm going to do here is just put in the password, test the connection, and then confirm that that's all fine. Now, as I say, I'm not here to blind you with science. If I go into the data flow, we literally have source connections using the SIR3CTO connection manager. So for business hierarchies here, there's a connection manager. And then we're using the Redding connection manager here for the connection to Azure. And what we can do is execute this task. And you can have any number of transforms in between here before loading it in. And this is really just showing you that you can use sysload data in SQL Data Warehouse, but because it's a single Gator client, it's not the most performant. One consideration that you might have, if you've already got a lot of sys packages that are loading into an existing data warehouse, my recommendation would be that you change your destination data warehouse to files, and have the destination of those sys packages to files itself, because using Polybase we can pick up those files and efficiently load data, and this is particularly important for huge volumes of data. As you can see, we've loaded the data into the data warehouse relatively quickly in this simple demonstration, but we're only dealing with, you know, 27 rows, just over 2,000 rows, and nearly 50,000 rows. So SIS is going to work with those volumes really, really well. But once you start getting to big volumes of data, that's when you start to see the performance of SIS really suffer. So in summary, if you've got massive volumes of data, or big volumes of data even, that's going into the gigabytes, you might want to use your SIS packages. We factor them to output to text files, and then use Polybase to load those text files into your data warehouse, because it will do it in minutes. So we'll stop that package, and that package executed successfully. We'll go back into Management Studio and run this query against the data warehouse, where we get confirmation of the records being created. Now we're going to go back to the deck. So what is Polybase? Well, essentially, Polybase contains three core objects that you need to create. Now, ultimately, what you're doing is you're effectively creating what's called an external table. Now, the external table, you can load data into it by importing data into it through what's called a CTAS statement, or a create table as select. We'll cover that later on, but essentially, external tables are objects that provide structure over unstructured source data. So in order to link to that unstructured source data, external tables need two supporting objects. Firstly, you've got the external data source, and the external data source provides the connection information, if you will, to the underlying source data, and this is typically files that are stored in Azure Blob Store. And the second supporting object that you'll create is what's called an external file format. And the external file format is there simply to provide structure to an unstructured or semi-structured file. These three together basically provide the objects required to take advantage of Polybase. So an external table is simply a metadata table to describe external data. It doesn't hold data at all. It simply provides the metadata over the top of the source data. So if you delete an external table, you don't drop the data in the underlying source, you just drop in the metadata-driven table itself. And the reason we have external tables is it gives Azure SQL Data Warehouse this ability to access data beyond the internal database itself, and perhaps, and get data from Azure Blob Store. So this is what's giving Azure SQL Data Warehouse the ability to work with unstructured and semi-structured data. For those of you that are familiar with Hadoop, you could just say that external tables has a very similar behavior to Hive external tables, in that they're metadata driven tables as well. Now, you can query information about external table metadata. There is a specific system object called sys.external_tables, and you can actually query sys.tables as well to view those external tables to give you information about them. So how do we create an external table? Well, here is code that's remarkably, well, it is T-SQL. The only difference here from a create table statement is we've got the word external in there. So we've got create external table, we define a schema name, we define the name of the table itself, we've got the column names, the data types, and the nullability. Now, where Polybase gets involved is in the code below the create external table definition, because what we do is we start off with a with clause. And then the first thing we'll define is the location of the where the file is located itself. And what we then do is refer to the data source object and the file format object as we've created them by their names So just like an external table has a name, the data source object will have a name, and the file format has a name. And we just point to those object names, and this will provide the data source connection information and the file format and the structure in which it should be. We can also define reject types and values for any information that we want to reject as well. So an external data source begins with create external data source, and you give it a name. Now in this instance, this is called My Azure Data Source. So that object name essentially will be placed in this part here. So My Azure Storage Name, we're going to refer to it in here. So in this instance, what we're doing is we are using the type of Hadoop. Now, that doesn't connect to a Hadoop cluster directly. What it does is Hadoop uses Azure Blob as well. So you may use Hadoop to store unstructured files in Hadoop, but that is stored essentially in Azure Blob store within the Hadoop cluster. So even though the type is Hadoop here, you're actually specifically referring to the underlying Windows Azure storage blob. So fundamentally, if you've got a Hadoop cluster with unstructured files, look at the Hadoop cluster configuration, look at the Azure blob storage account names that are there, and you can refer to them in here. So effectively, with the location, we're pointing to Windows Azure storage blob. And if you've got a container, put the container name here and then define the storage account name .blob.core.windows.net and then any path that you've got. That will all be encapsulated within the My Azure Data Source object. Now, when it comes to the file format, we use create external file format. In this case, it's called ORC file format. And here we've got format type of ORC, which is optimized record column. And then we're pointing to the data compression codecs, which in this case is default codec and snappy codec. And this is an example of a file format defined for optimized record column. Now, there are other formats. So we've got Parquet for file formats. And this is an example of creating an external file format called Parquet file format. And again, we put the format type as Parquet and the data compression pointing to the relevant codecs. Be mindful that there can be data type mismatches. So for example, when it comes to ORC or Parquet, if you've got a SQL type of date, the recommendation is to use timestamp. You could also get different ranges as well. So in Hive, a timing goes from -128 to +127, whereas in SQL, it's not 255. So these are things that you're gonna have to be mindful of there. We've got an example here of a delimited text, which is what a lot of people will use. So we're creating an external file format called My Text File Format with format type equals delimited text. And with delimited text, we've got format options such as the field terminator, the string delimiter, the date format, and whether you use the type default, and then the data compression with the relevant codecs in there. Be mindful that with delimited text guidance, use UTF-8 to encode your files. We are being asked by customers to use UTF-16. That is on our roadmap, so watch this space. Things can change. I've said that on a number of videos, so make sure you keep up to date with the updates that we have, and you can do this through the product group's webpage. Raw delimiter is not configurable. No raw delimiters in strings. And use gzip, not winzip, for compression. Date formats, be mindful that there are implications of date formats here. And basically, if you want to use date time, you express it within the delimited code as yyyy-mm-dd, and then you specify your hours as hh:mm:ss. There are other examples of the different date times that are there that you can use. Be mindful that you can only have one data type, one date format per external format file. Okay, you can't have mixtures. So let's have a look at an example of loading data with Polybase. So we'll choose one example here and we'll go back to Management Studio. And within Management Studio, we are going to, we're going to delete the dates table. So that dates table is now dropped. And to use Polybase, the end game is we're going to take the data that basically mimics what's in the on-prem here. But effectively what we've got is instead of addressing a table of that data, imagine we've had a sys process that has created a file of those dates. And that goes back to my recommendation of refactoring your sys packages to take advantage of Polybase. So rather than, you know, I'm going to show you how I've done that. So you should know how to export data out of sys into a text file. And basically within that, what we've got is in here, we've ended up with dimdates2.txt, and this is the data. So imagine that a sys package has taken that from your on-prem SQL server and just dumped it out. Now, within the portal, what we're going to do is rather than create a full Hadoop cluster, we're going to check what storage accounts we've got. Okay, so we've got no storage accounts at all. So I'm going to create a storage account. So I'll click on plus to add new. This will bring up the services category blade. And what I'm going to do is just type out storage account. Click on storage account here. And then from within here, I'm going to create an Azure blob storage account. And think about this. It's imagine you've got a Hadoop cluster. Your Hadoop cluster will automatically provision these storage accounts underneath the hood. So from this case, what we're doing is we're bypassing the full Hadoop cluster because it'll take too long to create, and we're just going to create a storage account, and it's designed to mimic data that you've got in a Hadoop cluster. So what we're going to do is we're going to define the name of the storage account first, CTO storage account. And we've got the deployment model that we'll use as resource manager, and we're going to set it as blob storage. We'll leave the performance the same. We'll set the redundancy to local redundant storage. We'll leave the access tier the same, the storage service encryption the same. And what we'll do is we'll assign it to a resource group that I created for the purpose of these videos. And we are going to choose CTO ADS Prep RG stored in North Europe. There are other videos out there for storage account management, so I'll leave it at this point. What we'll do is click on create. This is going to validate the configuration that I've set, and it's going to create the storage account for me. The deployment has started. We'll just wait for that to complete. So the deployment has been completed. So what we're going to do now is go to all resources and do a search for the storage account that I've literally just created. And there is the storage account. So we'll click on the storage account. Now what I could do is I'm going to transfer the text file into the Azure Blob Store. Before I do that though, is one of the things you can do is organize your storage accounts into containers. So I'm going to create a container within this storage account, and I'm not being I'll call it data container, and I'm going to leave the access type as private, which means I need a key to access that. So there's the data container. Choose OK, click on create. And here is the access key that I was talking about. If we click on the access key, what I'm going to do is copy the first key and then just open Notepad up and just basically keep that key in there for use later on. So now I've got the data container within the CTO blob store. What I can then do is click on that container. And I could use AZ copy to do this if I wanted to, but I'm going to upload that date, dim date to file. So let's go into here and then browse to the file that we've created. And there's dim date2.txt, and we'll upload that. The upload is completed, and as you can see here, dim date 2 is in the data container location within the CTO storage account.blob.windows.net. And I'm going to copy that as well. And I'm going to put this in my notepad document as well. So that's the prep work done. We've effectively taken a sys package and outputted the data as a text file in Azure Blob Store. Now we can use Polybase. How do we do that? Well, what we're going to do is we are going to do this in Visual Studio. And in Visual Studio, I'm going to open up a file. So I'm going to connect up into Visual Studio and then log in as the load user. Okay, so we've got confirmation there that we're actually in the right database. And what we're going to do now is change the database to the EquityDB, because this is where we're doing the loading. So we've now changed the context of that. Now, the first two steps we're going to do is a one-off operation, the first time you're going to be loading data. And what you've got to do is you've got to create a master key that will encrypt credentials that you'll be sending to connect to the Azure Blob Store. So the first thing we'll do is we'll create a master key and we'll execute that. So that's completed successfully. So once we've created the master key, we're then going to create a database scope credential. And this is really important. The database scope credential can have any name that you want. And there's two settings to put. The identity, which I'm really not bothered about. Really not bothered about the identity at all. You can call it whatever you want. What I am bothered about is the secret. And the secret is essentially the access key for the Azure Blob Store. So if I go back to my Notepad document, and within the Notepad document, we grab and copy that key, we can paste it in here, and this is how it's going to use the database scope credential called Azure Storage Credential, and it'll take that key and present that key to the Azure Blob Store. So let's execute that. That's completed successfully. So those first two steps, I've got nothing to do with Polybase. It's setting up the security for providing access, and they're one-off operations essentially. So now we create the supporting objects for Polybase. We've got an external data source called Azure Storage with the type Hadoop. But as you've seen, I've not created a Hadoop cluster. We very specifically put the location as Windows Azure Blob Storage, data container at ctostorageaccount.blob.co.windows.net. And that is what I've literally just created in front of you. Notice the credential is the Azure Storage credential that we have quite literally just created right here. Let's highlight that code and execute it. The command completes successfully. Now we've got the data source, we're now going to create the file format. And I opened up the file and it was the date information. So we're creating the external file format, text file, with the format type of delimited text and the format option. And we're just specifying a field terminator here. Let's execute that. So now we've got the supporting objects for the data source, and that data source is pointing to a credential, and we've got the external file format. Now we can actually import the data using Polybase, and we do this by using a CTAS statement, or a CETAS statement. A CTAS statement is create table as select. A CTAS statement is create external table as select. And what you'll notice here is that we've got a standard create table statement, but it's got external in it with the columns, the data types, and the nullability. But within the with clause, we start making reference to the Polybase objects. So location is the root of the path that we've defined. The data source is Azure storage, and the file format is text. So these refer to text file, and it refers to Azure storage, and Azure storage, as we know, refers to Azure storage credential, which is up here. So there's a dependencies on a number of items here. Now what this will do is, if we run all that code, it will create the external table, which is a metadata table. So let's execute that. That's completed successfully. So what we can do now is we could run a query against that. But bear in mind that the external metadata table is a metadata table. The actual data that it's querying is in the underlying text file. So 2192. We can then select all the columns if we wanted to. So we've got the full raft of T-SQL at our disposal here. But the important thing that we're trying to do is, we're going to create a table, and we're doing this with a CTAS statement, okay? So basically, we're creating a table here, as select, and that table will be called DBODates. And if you saw the second video in this presentation, we talked about indexing and distribution. So we'll do that, execute that. That command was completed successfully. What that means is we've done a select of that external table that we created earlier called dimdate2external and dimdate2external. We've literally just created here, but it's going ahead and creating a table called dimdate, and using the table definition of dimdate2external to do it. So if you saw video 2, you know the very first thing you should do once you load is create statistics on the data where you feel is appropriate. So we'll just do that, create those statistic objects. Those have been created, and we'll go back into Management Studio, where we will go to the data warehouse, we will refresh the tables and query the dates table, and we have successfully used Polybase to load data in this table. So this is something that you might do for initial loads as an example. So let's go back to the slide deck. Now, orally, if you're in my in-person training event, you'd be doing this yourself. But we're going to move on to import and exporting data. And you've seen this already in the previous demonstration. In the previous demonstration, we looked at a CTAS statement. And this is what we did to create the final DIMDATE table. Create table temp FACT Online Sales with distribution and custom comm stored index as select. Start from your ASB FACT Online Sales. And you've got an option there to put labels in as well, and we'll talk about that in a moment. So we've got a label here called CTES Import. But you've seen that for yourself with the demo that I've just done by importing data into the data warehouse for the date dimension. We can also define partitioning during that CTAS. So as you saw in the previous statement, we've now increased this with a partition clause where we define the column on which the partition will be based. In this case, it's date key here. So in this case, it's date key, range right of values, and then we're defining the ranges in there. We've also got the ability to export data with CTAS. You saw the CTAS statement in the demo that we've just done, and that was done to create the external table. So here is an example of that from a code perspective. Again, we're using labels. And labels are useful because you can add labels to any code that you do, whether it's a select, insert, update, delete, CTAS or CTAS statement. And we can query sys.dmpdwexec requests where label equals and put a clause in there. And from that, you can pick up a list of operations. So labeling is quite a useful technique to use. So what about monitoring data loads? Well, effectively, there are occasions when data loads go wrong. So here are a few statements that you can run to give you information. So firstly, how can we monitor execution requests? Well, there is a dynamic management view that you can use called sysdmpdwexecrequests. Here you can get information pertaining to the operation, what steps have been done. You'll notice there the location, the step is actually null at this point. What we're interested in here is the duration, the start and the end time, and how long it took, and what resource class is being used, and capturing the command that's been executed. Now, if you want that step information, you can add the step index and the location type columns from the a different dynamic management view, which is DMPDW requests steps, to add that additional information there as well. And then you can bring all this together through a join. So you can join essentially the PDW SQL request with the PDW SQL request steps together to bring all that into one query. And this will give you a breakdown of the various steps and requests that have been done during your loads. Monitoring worker activities. So workers are basically components within Azure SQL Data Warehouse that will perform the work. So this query is done by using the dynamic management view called sysdmpdwdmsexternalwork. And here again, you want to get things like the start and the end time, the throughput, the duration, and what worker is being used itself. There's a whole raft of monitoring tools that you can use and code that you can use to do this. Please do investigate this, but be mindful that here are some that can help you look at the activity that's going on. So moving on, we're going to look at Azure Data Factory integration. So Azure Data Factory is a technology that's part of the information management category of technologies, and it's responsible for orchestrating the movement of data between various data sources and data destinations. You can also use intermediate data syncs, as they're called, such as maybe you're using an Azure Blob Store as a transient storage area for data. An example of that will be you refactor your sys packages to output text files. Those text files are in Azure Blob Storage, and then you're calling data from the Azure Blob Store to load into Data Warehouse itself. So from an Azure Data Factory perspective, there's four components that you need to be aware of. Link services can provide connection information to data, or it could call compute technologies such as a Hadoop cluster or a machine learning model and so forth. Then you'll create data sets, and data sets is the structure of the data itself. And on those data sets, you'll perform activities. And activities can be cleansing or transform operations. So for example, you may have an activity that does a Hive query, and that activity of the Hive query calls the link service that's called a on-demand a Hadoop cluster to execute that Hive query to do some cleansing. You may then have a second activity, and that second activity is essentially taking the cleansed data from the Hadoop cluster and then loading it into a machine learning model. So really, that slide's wrong, actually. I'm going to change that slide and just move that out a bit so I can do that, because pipelines are really a combination of multiple activities, and I don't mind making changes during a presentation like this. You got to see a pipeline is a collection of activities, and the thing about pipelines is that you can schedule a pipeline. So fundamentally, that will schedule the activities underneath it, and more importantly, you can monitor pipelines as well. So yeah, just a correction there. I would say that pipelines is a collection of activities that do given tasks, and activities relate to data sets that it's going to manipulate, and to link services that calls the source of that data set, or indeed compute resources that will perform some work, such as a Hadoop cluster performing a Hive query, or indeed you may call Data Lake to perform a NewSQL command. Now, from a poly-based perspective, when you're creating a link service, it can only go to Azure storage at this point in time. So this goes back to the point we were making with regards to creating an external data source of Hadoop. Well, it's not really calling Hadoop, it's making a call to the underlying Azure Blob storage itself. And there's no store shared access signature authentication as well. Let me explain what shared access signature authentication is. This is to do with Azure Blob Store. So if I go back into the portal and then go back to our storage accounts, one of the things that you would have seen me do with the storage account is I would have taken a copy of the access key. Now, for the purpose of Azure Blob Storage, you can only make use of that access key to allow a link service in Azure Data Factory to connect. So here's the access key here. And this is what you'll have seen in a previous demonstration where I went over here and actually copied it. Well, sometimes people are really nervous to actually use the access key, and what they'll do is they can make use of shared access signatures to basically have a hash of the access key. So let's say we're going to allow access to a blob, we're only going to allow access to a container, and within that container, we're only going to give read permission, and then we can, at the bottom here, generate a shared access signature key, which will provide a key that gives access to a blob of a container with read permission in this time range for allowed IP addresses with these protocols. Now, unfortunately, what that will do is if you generate that SAS, you'll get this token that you can copy, but unfortunately, Azure Data Factory at the moment in time can't make use of that. It can only make use of the access key. So I think it was better there just to show you the difference of what that means there. So going back to the presentation, what you will get, and with that in mind, you'll get a link service that effectively defines the name for the link service object itself here. Oops. And this is for Azure Blob Store. And within the properties, you'll define a hub name that is a name that's the same throughout all the objects that are part of it. We'll define type of Azure storage, and then the type properties is the connection string, which is the endpoint is HTTPS. The storage account itself, in this case for me, will be CTO storage account, and then you put in that account key here. So firstly, you'll create the link service object to Azure Blob Store. Then you'll create the link service object to SQL DW. Again, you'll give the name to that link service. You'll have a hub name that's the same, but this time the type is Azure SQL DW, and with the type properties, you'll put the connection string, the connection string is a data source as CTO, SQL, server, whatever I called it, .database.windows.net. The initial catalog in my case here will be EquityDB. You choose whether you use integrated security, or in our case it's false, so therefore the user ID will be ctester-O'Neill, and the password will be the password that I have. And then we can define a connect time up and whether encryption is there as well. So you kind of seen me do that in a different way in a previous one. For Polybase, for the input data set, the input data set can only be Azure Blob. The type can only be text format. The raw delimiter is new line. The null values is 2 quotes. And the encoding is UTF-8. And there's not escape character or quote character for that activity at all. So this is an example of what an input data set would look like, where you'd effectively point to the blob path, which is data container at CTO storage account .blob.windows.net. The format you'll define as the text format, what your delimit is, what your raw delimit is, there's your null, there's your encoding, and then don't forget the compression, which is gzip as optimal. Okay. Alternatively, you could use what's called the copy activity that is new. It's in preview at the moment in Azure Data Factory. Your blob source properties, you need skip header line count is not specified. The SQL DW sync for the slice identifier is not specified, and the column mapping is not specified itself. So you could do the copy activity using a JSON file, and the key point in this JSON file is that you would set allow polybase equal to true here, or alternatively you could use the copy activity wizard, and that's what I'm going to show you. Be mindful there are limitations. So the prime limitation is one-time syncs can't be edited, right? So I'm going to give you a demo of a one-time sync. Once it's done, I can't edit it. And Polybase can't be configured in the copy wizard at this point in time today, but it could change soon because it's a roadmap item. File headers have to be addressed. So ADF validates the data types of data in the source based on that first row. So you might want to remove that, which is what I did in DIMDATE2 text file. Fields must all map to strings if headers are present. So there you go, headers become strings. And use another copy activity blob to blob to remove headers from the source if you need that step. Avoid column mappings. Input names must equal output names, and data types must match as well. So it's quite strict in its limitations, but you'll see from this demo that it is relatively straightforward to do. So in this instance, what we're going to do is drop out of this and go back to the portal. In the all resources that you can see here, just filter the resources that we've got. Oh. Okay, so the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to create a new Data Factory instance. So we'll go to databases, and in the featured apps, Data Factory appears at the bottom, and it's very simple to configure a Data Factory. We're going to specify the name of the Data Factory instance. So I'm going to call it CTOADF. I'll assign it to the subscription here, and I'll use the resource group that I've been using for all my presentations, which is CTO. And in here, it should filter it to adsprep.org. And I'm going to store it in North Europe. Now, it looks as if the Azure Data Factory is only available in three regions. What I need to make you aware of is that's fine because a data factory activity can call resources in other regions. Remember that data factory orchestrates data movement and relies on other services to perform that movement for it. Essentially, data factory just provides the pipelines of movement. So we'll choose North Europe, click on create. This will create the data factory instance. So the deployment is now successful. So what I'm going to do is go to all resources, filter by my first three characters as I usually do. And there is my data factory. So we'll click on the data factory. And this brings up the data factory canvas. Now, this is not a data factory video, so I'm just going to go straight to what we're working with. And as you can see here, we have a copy data action that we can perform. In this instance, if we click on this, what it will do is it will bring up a wizard where we can essentially use the wizard to move data in or out of Azure Data Warehouse. So what I'm going to do is, in this example, we're going to take the business hierarchy's data and output that out to our blob store. So let's call this business hierarchy DW to Azure blob. We can put a description here. We're only going to run it once, but we could do a schedule of monthly, weekly, daily, hourly, and minute, and we can choose a start time. We're just going to run once now, and we've got an expiry time here. This is 3 hours. I'm just going to leave it as the default. So what is our source? Well, our source in this case is going to be Azure SQL Data Warehouse. We'll click on next. What we need is the connection name. So the connection name, we'll call it CTO SQL DW. And then this is going to be from an Azure subscription. And that Azure subscription is my subscription. And within it, we are going to do SQL, CTO, MSFT, ADS SQL SRV. Okay. Now, the database is EquityDB and the username is, and we'll put this password. So, fortunately, from within the wizard, we can get all the information that we need. We click on next, and then we're asked for the data set that we want to do. Now, we can use a query to pull that information back, but what you'll see is we've got a number of tables in here. There's a DIM Data2 external that we use to actually import data from Azure into Data Warehouse. We're going to choose the business hierarchy table, but you could use a query. And basically, once we've done that, we'll click on next. Then we choose our destination, which will be Azure Blob Store, and click on next. And the connection name, we'll call it CTO storage accounts, and this is from and this is where your notepad becomes useful because I can take this and put it in here. But I'm pretty sure we can pick it out, to be honest. Yeah, so I was going to all that effort. I didn't need to do it manually at all. So there's the storage account itself. And what you've got is specify a folder that will contain the output files. So we'll browse for that. And there's the data container that we created. So we'll choose that. And we'll choose the compression type that we want. I'm going to put none in this case. Fact. Yeah, we'll put none. And then here's the file format setting. So you kind of get in the sense here between the connection, we're getting the external data source and the external file format, right? So it's a text format, comma, carriage return line feed. You can use a custom delimiter you want. You can add a header to a file. And then there's advanced settings with regards to escape characters and quote characters. So very much like the external file format settings that you would have. We're going to leave it as this. Click on next. The performance, relay, parallel copy. And as you can see, you can choose the parallelism there. We'll just choose auto. And then we've got the summary. We've got next. It's going to validate the runtime environment. Validation has passed. It's registering the connections within Azure Data Factory and it's creating the pipeline. And then it's going to provision the activities itself. And now it's provisioning the activities to copy that data across. And what you can do is you can click here to monitor the pipeline. That'll take you to the ADF monitoring screen. But what we'll do is just take a look at the Azure Blob Store within the portal. And we'll do this by going to All Resources. CTO. We'll go to the storage account. We've got the data container here. And as you can see, we've got business hierarchies. If we click on that, we can download that file. And there are, that's the information within the file. So within this, you have seen how you can use the copy activity in Azure Data Factory to export data out of Azure Data Factory into an Azure Blob Store. Now, a really good use case for this is maybe you've got a view in Azure SQL Data Warehouse that's collecting all the features that you need for a machine learning activity. So then we can query the view, get the information out into a text file, and then we can feed that into machine learning to perform a modeling activity against that. So that's the use case for using this. So let's go back to the slides. You'd be doing a lab on this, so you know. If you ever wanted to attend one of my in-person events or any of my colleagues' in-person events, you can go to learnanalytics.microsoft.com. We have dates on there from our team, but we also have dates on there from really good partners. So shout out loud if you want an in-person event anywhere around the globe. We tend to go to meetings around the globe on this stuff. Anyway, final part, recommendations. So here are some recommendations that we've picked up through being involved with numerous customer engagements. I hope it's loud and clear, you know, transfer data to Blob Storage. Now, fundamentally, I suggested that with SIS packages, if you've got huge volumes or big volumes of data that you need to put into Azure Data Factory, sorry, into Azure SQL Data Warehouse, it's probably better to have the SIS package doing all the transformations, creating text files and having Polybase use the text files as a source for doing it. You might also want to consider splitting those files up. And this goes back to the data warehouse units, where the more data warehouse units you have, the more nodes you have, the more the distributions you spread. Also, if the load user is dedicated to a particular resource class, let's say like large resource class, then you're getting more megabytes per distribution. Now, that means you get more megabytes per distribution, but you get more nodes, distribution spread across the nodes, some more workers. And what workers can do is it can basically take advantage by working on one file at a time. So with DW6000, you get 60 workers. So you could basically split one day, one table into 60 files, so you get one file for each of the readers and workers that are in there. So that's something to bear in mind. And there's a whole host of information on the product groups website. Just do a search in Bing for Azure SQL Data Warehouse. The first non-promoted result that will come back will be to the product group page, and there's loads of techniques that you can do there. So use create table as select data with Polybase for maximum throughput. Always configure a load user and place them in the appropriate resource class, and maximize the number of readers to accelerate the load. So for example, DW1000 plus has 60 readers, so multiply the number of files by readers for a balanced throughput. So that's what I was referring to a minute ago. And this is useful for the initial load. You would have done, well, we've done the lab separately here. What I always try and do is do a lab review. Here are the questions that are there. Please feel free to pause now if you want to try and answer those questions yourself. In summary, we've covered a lot. We've looked at the role of the load user and how important it is. We've looked at the different methods for loading data with a single gator client and a parallel method. So we saw sys and how that could be used, but really we focused on Polybase right from the beginning and how that could be used. Within the Polybase demo, we looked at how we can import and export data. I showed you some dynamic management views to monitor your data loads. And finally, we saw how you can use the ADF copy activity to load SQL Data Warehouse. And we finished off with loading recommendations. If you want any more information about the training that we provide, such as online training, videos, instructor-led training, the blogs, and so forth, please go to learnanalytics.microsoft.com. And hopefully I'll see you at the next video. Goodbye.